Good morning. Hope everyone is doing well today, no matter where you may be watching this. But this morning, we are going to return to our series on the Sermon on the Mount. So if you have a Bible with you and you want to follow along, you could turn to Matthew chapter 5. That's where we're going to be today, Matthew chapter 5. We actually began 2020 by a series looking at one of Jesus' most famous public address, his Sermon on the Mount. And in this sermon, Jesus lays out what it looks like to be one of his followers, to be a part of his kingdom. So let me go ahead and read for you the passage we're going to look at today. So Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 33, says this: "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.' But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil." That's our passage for today. I don't know what the last couple of weeks have looked like for you with the quarantine and everything, but I've watched a lot more television than I normally do. And the other day I was flipping through and I came across an old movie that I love. Do you remember the movie A Few Good Men? It's with Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson. And in the movie, there is this one iconic scene where Jack Nicholson is on trial and Tom Cruise, the lawyer, is questioning him, and they start yelling at each other back and forth. And then Tom Cruise yells, "I want the truth." And then remember what Jack Nicholson says? He says, "You can't handle the truth." Do you remember this movie and that scene? Well, that's what Jesus is talking about today. He's talking about handling the truth. Take a look at how Jesus starts this passage. Jesus says, "Again, you have heard that it was said." Now, notice that Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said," and he doesn't say, "For it is written." Normally, when we read through the Bible and we see a phrase that says, "For it was written," we know that the Bible is quoting another part of the Bible somewhere else. But here, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said." And what's going on here is this quote that Jesus is referencing is not actually in the Bible. Let's look at the quote that he's talking about. It says, "You have heard that it was said of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.'" Now, that sounds Bible-like, doesn't it? Because parts of it are from the Bible. What's happening here is that the religious leader of Jesus's day have went through the scriptures and they've taken a lot of the things that God has said about promises and oaths and keeping your word, and they've combined those verses into one phrase that makes one principle, the one that Jesus quotes right here. And the parts of the Bible that are used to craft this phrase come from places like this one in the book of Exodus. It says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." And what we see here is another translation says, "If you misuse the name of the Lord." So it's clear from this passage that God is taking very seriously how people use his name. And then we see in another place like this one, in Leviticus, says, "You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." So from this verse, we gather that when you bring God's name into an oath, when you swear by the name of God, then you better not profane it. You better keep your promise, which is exactly what we see in the very next verse here. It says, "If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." So combining verses like these is what the religious leaders did to come up with that phrase that Jesus mentions in our passage today. But combining verses like these should also show people like us that it's pretty clear that when you make a promise or when you swear an oath, God takes that very serious. It's very serious business to God. Did you see that in those passages? And God takes these kind of things so seriously that in the book of Deuteronomy, we read this. It says, "If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin." Uh-oh. Now we see that broken promises and broken vows, in the eyes of God, they are seen as sin. Now all of a sudden, taking a vow or making a promise or taking an oath gets a little bit more serious, doesn't it? All of a sudden, there seems to be consequences. And I don't know about you, but I'm not a huge fan of consequences. But then in the very next verse, we read this. It says, "But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin." Oh. And if your brain works like my brain, I start thinking, wait a minute, I have an idea. If taking a vow or making an oath has consequences, and I'm not very good at keeping my promises sometimes, then I don't have to face any of the consequences if I don't ever make any promises. If I don't ever make any vows, if I don't ever pledge any oaths, if I don't ever swear at all by the name of God, then I won't be held accountable to the consequences, right? Isn't that what this verse is saying? That if I refrain from vowing, if I refrain from taking oaths, then I'm going to be off the hook. Do you know what we call that kind of thing? We call it a loophole. The definition of a loophole is this. A loophole is a means of escape, especially through an ambiguity or omission in the text through which the intent or the obligation may be evaded. Now, the reason that people like you and me look for loopholes is because we're trying to escape. And usually the stuff that we're trying to escape from is consequences to our own actions. And notice how built into this definition, it says the intent or obligation may be evaded. That's what we're trying to do when we use loopholes. We're trying to evade whatever intent or obligation that we don't want to have to face. I had a friend who was trying to fly on an airplane, and he had this oversized package that he wanted to fly with him, but they were going to charge him $50 to check it as baggage. But luckily, he had called ahead to ask them this question, and he also found out that on this particular airline, you don't have to be charged any fee whatsoever if you bring golf clubs. So he took his oversized package, he put it in a golf bag, and there you go. He evaded the obligation from the airline that he didn't want to use, and he did it through an ambiguity. Now that's what a loophole is. And that's what loopholes do. They look for an ambiguity that we can exploit to try to evade any intentions and obligations that we don't want to have to follow. And guess what? People like us, we don't just do this with airline baggage guidelines. We also sometimes do this with God. In the passage that we are looking at, Jesus is calling out the religious leaders of his day for doing this very thing, for following the rules technically, but evading the intention and the obligation of them. You see, what's going on here is that the religious leaders of Jesus' day, they are notorious for the technical ways that they were following the commands of God down to the very details. At the very beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of God." And I bet when Jesus said this, many people sunk their heads in disappointment because to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees would be a daunting task. Because these dudes were more righteous than anybody around. Let me give you a picture of the kind of righteousness or the kind of details that these guys dedicated to the way in which they followed the commands of God. In Matthew chapter 23, the scribes and the Pharisees are described like this. It says, "The scribes and the Pharisees, they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long." Do you know what a phylactery is? Several times in the Old Testament, God will say something like this to his people, "And it will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that this law of the Lord is to be on your lips." And what's going on here, basically the command that's being given here is that God's words are to guide his people continually. Their thoughts are to be guided by God's words. And since your thoughts come from your brain, that is what we're talking about, a reminder on your forehead. Your thoughts should be on the ways of God continually. It's pretty straightforward what God is saying here. Think about my ways all the time. Well, some of the religious people took this extremely literally. And what they did is they would take these leather straps and they would wrap them around their foreheads, and on the leather strap would be this little leather box. It was called a phylactery. And inside this little leather box was a tiny little piece of scripture. And by wearing this on their forehead, what they were doing was they were keeping God's words on their minds literally. That's what a phylactery is. And it says that these guys, that their phylacteries were broad. So if you get a picture of this, these scribes and Pharisees, they're walking around with these fanny pack looking things on their heads. That's how literal they are taking the commands of God. And that's not all these guys were doing. It says not only were their phylacteries broad, it also says that their fringes were long. Now, what this means is many of the Jewish people in their day, they would attach fringes onto the edges of their garments. These are like little tassels. And the reason for doing this is that each one of these tassels were to represent the commands of God. And throughout the day, every time one of these tassels would rub against your skin or it would catch your eye, it was supposed to be a reminder that God's commands are to always be on your mind and to guide all of your ways. But the scribes and the Pharisees, they didn't have just any kind of tassels. It says that they would make their tassels extra long. You know how at high school graduation, you get the cap and you get the gown. And then the smart kids, they also get one of those yellow cords that they wear around their necks. So if you have one cord, you're smart. If you get two cords, then you're really smart. If you get three cords, then you're super smart. And if you had no cords, then you're dusty. Well, when I graduated from high school, I had a classmate of mine who didn't receive any official yellow cords from Bethel Park High School. But before graduation day, they went to the craft store and they made for themselves a dozen different cords of all different colors. So when they got up on the stage for graduation, everybody was like, hey, look at that guy. Well, that's like these scribes and Pharisees. Their righteousness was seen by everybody. But according to Jesus, their righteousness had one big glaring problem. And that is, it missed the big picture. And another example, in the very same chapter, Jesus says this about the scribes and the Pharisees. He says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. Now, get a picture of what Jesus is saying here. The faithful Jewish people of his day, they would give 10% of their income and they would tithe that back to the Lord. But the scribes and the Pharisees took this so literally and took this so seriously to give back everything to God that not only did they tithe 10% of their income, they also tithed 10% of things like their spices. So imagine on a Sunday morning, you're sitting in the pew and the offering plate comes by. And then it gets to the guy who has a fanny pack on his head and all those cords around his neck. And he, after he puts in his money, he starts pulling out a spice rack and measuring out the dill and the cumin and all of the other herbs in there. That's what's happening here. These scribes and the Pharisees, they tithe like this to God. And this is the kind of righteousness that Jesus says his followers are supposed to exceed. Well, how do we do that? How do we exceed that kind of righteousness? Well, Jesus says, here's how you do it. Notice here in this verse, it says that the scribes and the Pharisees have neglected the weightier matters. Now, they're really good at the technical stuff. They're really good at following the letter of the law. But Jesus says that they have missed the spirit of the law. They've missed the point. They've missed the big picture of what God is saying. Jesus says, hey guys, thanks for the spices, but where's your justice? Where's your mercy? Where's your faithfulness? In the very next verse, Jesus says this, these you ought to have done without neglecting the others. And then Jesus makes the absurdity of what they're doing completely clear when he says this, you blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. So picture these guys in their soup, straining out little gnats that are in their soup, and then they swallow a camel. Jesus is saying, you guys focus on the little things, and then you miss the big things that are right in front of you. And when it comes to oaths, the subject that we're talking about today, these guys were doing the very same thing, focusing on the gnats and ignoring the camel. If you go back to our passage, it says this. Jesus says, "Again, you have heard it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.'" And then Jesus says, "But I say to you, do not take an oath at all." Now, when Jesus says, "Do not take an oath at all," it's not that we should not be taking an oath because taking an oath is wrong. All throughout the Bible, we see that God takes oaths. Jesus himself takes oaths. The Apostle Paul takes oaths. So to take Jesus' statement here to mean that we're not supposed to take oaths, that we're not supposed to make promises, we're not supposed to sign contracts, we're not supposed to make sworn statements, that would be missing the point. Jesus' point here is do not take an oath at all if you're going to take oaths the way that the Pharisees do it. And then Jesus goes on to identify the kind of oaths that the scribes and the Pharisees take. Notice how Jesus says, "Do not take an oath either by heaven or by the earth or by Jerusalem or by your head." Now, what he's talking about here, all of these are referencing the types of oaths that the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious people of his day would take. You see, these religious people are the ones who focus on the gnats, who miss the big picture, but they would do this same sort of thing with oaths. They would make these elaborate, detailed descriptions defining about when and how and what degree an oath needed to be made. They had a bunch of rules around the oaths. And some of these rules included that if you swore an oath by heaven, or if you swore an oath by earth, or if you swore an oath by the temple in Jerusalem, all of these different oaths had different levels of seriousness and different levels of meaning. To illustrate what I'm talking about, do you remember this scene in A Christmas Story? This is where the kid gets his tongue stuck to the flagpole. Well, do you remember what preceded this event? It was an escalating series of dares. First, it was, "I dare you to lick the flagpole." And then it was, "I double dare you." And then, "I double dog dare you." And then finally, it was, "I triple dog dare you to lick the flagpole." And in the movie, all of the kids gasped, saying, "A triple dog dare, the most serious of them all." Well, this is the same kind of thing that was going on with oaths. If you swear an oath, that's one thing. But if you swear an oath by heaven, then that is way more serious. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus addresses this issue in more depth. He says, "Woe to you, blind guides, who say, 'If anyone swears by the temple, it's nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath.' You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred?" So these are the kind of oaths that the people in Jesus' day were taking. And Jesus points out how arbitrary these kind of oaths are when he says, what do you mean? If you swear by the temple, you don't have to keep it. But then if you swear by the gold of the temple, that's way more serious and you do have to keep it. Jesus is like, wait, what? Why is that oath more important than another one? Why does swearing on the gold of the temple change things? Why does swearing by heaven change things? Why does swearing by anything change things? Because according to Jesus, the truth should be the truth no matter what. And that's the problem with the oaths of the Pharisees. They had created a system where these oaths made truth flexible. Notice how it says, if anyone swears by the temple, it's nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. Do you see how they're making this system where truth is binding in one situation and then not binding in another situation? This is a loophole. They were trying to use ambiguity to evade being bound by the truth. Their system of oaths allowed situations where the truth could be flexible, where some of their oaths were not binding, where some of their promises didn't have to be kept, where sometimes in certain situations, you don't have to tell the truth. Yeah, do you see that in there? And it seems that the line that they have made where the truth actually should be taken seriously is when you bring God into it. If you swear by the name of God, then you definitely have to keep your oath. If you swear by the gold of the temple, then you have to keep your promise no matter what. Or the way that people like us do it, if you swear on the Bible, then you have to tell the truth, right? But outside of that, it's flexible. There's wiggle room. You're not on the hook unless you bring God into it. And Jesus is like, don't you guys know that God is always in it? That's why in our passage that Jesus says this, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God. Jesus is saying, don't you know that when you swear by heaven, God is in that? It is, heaven is where his throne is. Or they say, by earth, for it is his footstool. Jesus is saying, don't you know that when you swear by the earth, God is in it there too? Because he calls the earth his footstool. And then he says, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Jesus is saying, don't you know that when you swear by Jerusalem or the temple or any other city that God is in it there? Because God is the God who is the king of that city and every other city. So what Jesus is teaching here is that if you really know God, then you really know that God is in it everywhere. He's in everything. So if you think that the truth only matters when God is in it, then you should know that the truth always matters because God is in it in everything. He says, even when you swear by your own head, God is in it in that. Now we might read that and think, yeah, but that's my head. But even you know that though it's your head, you don't have the power over it. I mean, you can't make a single hair on your head white or black. Jesus says, when it comes to even your head, you know that God is in it there too. And especially now in the quarantine, this truth is becoming evident to everybody. Because there is a lot more gray hairs visible when all the salons and the barbershops shut down, right? So your secret is out. But because God is always in it, because everything that happens in life happens in front of God, Jesus says, that is why you do not need to take an oath at all. Not because you shouldn't take oaths, but because we shouldn't have to take oaths in order to tell the truth. We shouldn't have to take oaths in order to keep a promise. We shouldn't have to keep oaths in order to honor a commitment. For followers of Jesus, the truth should be such a priority that oaths are unnecessary. Because what an oath essentially does, every time we say, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, phrases like that are added to our promises to show how important and serious we are taking the truth in that situation. But Jesus says, let what you say simply be yes or no. Because for followers of Jesus, they shouldn't need an oath. Because they're so committed to the truth that when they say yes, they mean yes. When they say no, they mean no. When they make a promise, they keep it. When they convey information, it's accurate. But that's not always the case. As one author puts it, there is nothing as powerful as truth and often nothing as strange. We live in a world where the truth has levels to it. It's flexible. Yeah, they didn't do what they said they were going to do, but they never signed a contract, so it's allowable. Yeah, he lied, but the statement wasn't on the record, so there's nothing we can do about it. Yeah, everybody knows that they did it, but it wasn't caught on camera, so they got away with it. And in the world that we live in, even the stuff that is caught on camera isn't always true. Have you ever caught yourself watching one of those viral videos on the internet where like a shark is swimming down a flooded highway or something after a town is hit with a bunch of water and there's flash floods everywhere, only to find out later that that video was doctored. It wasn't true. It just shows that in our world, the truth is so flexible that sometimes you can't even believe your own eyes. Or you can't even trust your own ears. There's been a phrase made popular in the last couple of years, the phrase fake news. Nowadays, it gets thrown around as an insult or a cop-out or a defense mechanism. But the mere existence of this phrase at all shows that in our world, the truth has a spin to it. And it doesn't even matter which channel you're watching. It seems that the truth nowadays is flexible. It has levels. It has degrees. It gets used as a tool. But even in a world like ours, people realize that truth does matter. That there are certain areas of life where people crave unaltered truth. Like in our court systems. In court, we require all of our witnesses to swear an oath to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Because we all know that outside of court, unless you're under an oath, you may not get the truth. Or in our world, you may not get the whole truth. Or you may get the truth, but it comes with a bunch of other stuff added to it. This is the kind of thing that Jesus is talking about today. He's talking that his followers shouldn't have to make oaths. Instead, he says, let what you say be simply yes or no. What Jesus is saying when he says this is that his followers handle the truth in such a way that even in a world where the truth seems flexible, for his followers, the truth will have no levels, it'll have no exceptions, and it'll have no loopholes. Did you see all of that in the text that we look at today? But notice how Jesus says anything more than this. In studying this sermon this week, I initially thought this passage was just about keeping your promises and telling the truth. And since nobody considers themselves to be a liar, I didn't seem like there was going to be a whole lot of application for a self-proclaimed non-liar as myself. Sarcasm. Until I started to read some things that made me feel bad about myself. And since I don't want to feel bad alone, I'm going to share that stuff with you. When Jesus says anything more than this, he's not talking about simply telling the truth. He's also talking about how we play with the truth. Now, I might not consider myself to be a liar, but sometimes I do play with the truth. For instance, sometimes we omit important elements of the truth. Like the high school student who's going to a party at their friend's house, and mom asks, are there going to be parents there? And he says, yes, the parents will be at the house. What they said was true, but what they left out was, the parents will be there until 7, and the party starts at 7:30. Not a lie, but not exactly faithful to the truth either. Omission is when you leave out key elements of the whole truth, but keep enough elements so it's not technically a lie. We do this sort of stuff, don't we? What about this one? Sometimes we play with the truth for the sake of politeness. We say things like, oh, I would love to come, but I can't. When deep down, you know that you would not love to go. You would actually hate to go. In fact, you would actually love to do anything but do whatever it is they're asking you to do, but you're being polite. We have a name for stuff like this. We call them white lies. A white lie is where nobody gets hurt, so it's not that big of a deal, but it's still not the truth. Like when I was in college, I played basketball, and in the program, it says that I was 5'8". Didn't hurt anybody. Not exactly faithful to the truth, though. And then there's hyperbole and exaggerations. Sometimes this comes up when we get into a fight. You get into a fight and you say, you always do this, or you never do that. But that's not really true. They don't always do that. It's not truthful to say that they have never, ever done that. It's not true, but it is helpful and forceful in your argument when you say stuff like that. We do that, don't we? Other times we play with the truth by exaggerating. Do you know anybody who anytime they tell you a story, you know you have to do some research to find out what really happened? Because in the past, you were part of one of their stories, and when they tell it, the details are a little bigger, they're a little better, they're a little more exciting than what actually happened there. You know, like, you know, I caught a fish and it was this big. And really, it was this big. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're probably rolling your eyes at me saying, Dusty, you're nitpicking. This stuff isn't that big of a deal. These are little things. Everybody does this kind of stuff. But when Jesus says, let what you say be simply yes or no, isn't he talking about this kind of stuff too? Because if you're going to be the kind of person who can't be believed when they tell their fish story, what's going to happen when you have something really important to tell? You remember the fable, the boy who cried wolf? Or in Pittsburgh, it's the boy who cried wolf. The point of that fable is that if you play with the truth too much, you will never be believed. And isn't it true with our words that can also be true with our lives? That even though we play with the truth sometimes we actually play with the truth in the way that we live. Do you know what we call somebody who lives a truthful life? We say that person has integrity. This is the definition of integrity. Integrity is the state of being whole or undivided. And from the same word, integrity, is where we get the math word integer. You know what an integer is? It's a whole number and not a fraction. Another way that people like us play with the truth is that we live out our lives as fractions. Maybe you're a different person at home than you are at work. Maybe you're different around your school friends than you are with your church friends. You might talk a different way. You might joke a different way. You might act a different way. And then when you get into a different environment, everything changes. When we do this, we're divided. We're a fraction. We're playing with the truth. Maybe you're a different person on Sunday morning than you were on Saturday night. Maybe you're a different person in person than you are on the internet. Maybe in person, you're super nice. You're fun. Everybody likes to be around you. But on Twitter, on Facebook, and when you get behind a keyboard and send an email, you're kind of a jerk. Like you're a different person. That's what integrity is. It's living an undivided life. And I hope this morning that you've seen through the words of Jesus that how we handle the truth, it matters. It matters to Jesus and it should matter to us. When Jesus says to let your yes be yes and your no be no, I hope you've seen that this includes keeping your promises. Jesus wants his followers to be the kind of people who honor their commitments, who make good on their promises, because that is what our God is like. Every single promise that he makes, he keeps. I hope that you've seen this morning that Jesus is talking about telling the truth as well. We live in a world where the truth seems flexible and optional. But Jesus says, not so with his followers. Jesus' followers are to be so committed to the truth that not only do they tell the truth, but they make every effort to not even play with the truth. And I also hope that you saw this morning that Jesus is talking about living out the truth. Letting your yes be yes and your no be no means that followers of Jesus live lives of integrity, where our character and our conduct is undivided. We are the kind of people who are the same in every area of life. Because Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Let me close with this quote from William Barclay in his commentary on Matthew. He says this, "Life cannot be divided into compartments, in some of which God is involved and in others of which he is not involved. There cannot be one kind of language in the church and another kind of language in the shipyard or the factory or the office. There cannot be one kind of conduct in the church and another kind of conduct in the business world. The fact is that God does not need to be invited into certain departments of life. He hears not only the words that are spoken in his name, he hears all words. And there cannot be any such thing as a form of words which evades bringing God into any transaction. We will regard all promises as sacred if we remember that all promises are made in the presence of God. Hopefully this morning, we have some things to think about when it comes to how do people like you and me handle the truth. Let me pray for us. God, you are the God of all truth. And God, I pray that you would help us to become people of truth. And God, I pray that you would help us to see the ways in which we play with the truth, to misrepresent what the truth might be. God, I pray that we would be the kind of people that when it comes time for us to speak the truth that is so important, the truth about who you are, we wouldn't have made ourselves unbelievable by the way that we've handled the truth in our lives. God, I pray that you would help us to be the kind of people who live out integrity, that we would be the same in every area of life, that we wouldn't be different around different people, but we would be the same kind of person. And God, I pray that that kind of integrity would be modeled after you. So God, I pray that you would mold us and make us into the people of truth as we stand on your truth. So God, we thank you and we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.